Will the House please come to order?
Barbudo. Barbudo. Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Carson.
Yes.
Childers.
No. Here.
Cohey. Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Hales.
Here.
Hallinan.
Here.
Hammonds.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Jorgensen. Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon. Landon. Lockhart.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Mercer. Mercer.
Meyer. Here.
Miller.
Here.
Millen.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Philp.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Swanitzer Dan.
Here.
Swanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Barbudo.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Mercer.
Here.
60 present.
Our prayer today is again by Father Gary Ruzicka from St. Mary's Catholic Church in Cheyenne. Father Ruzicka.
Let us pray. Creator of the human family and Lord of all, bend down from your throne above the heavens to gaze upon your servants assembled here this morning. Bless the work that now lies before us. Keep us attentive to the direction of your wisdom. Help us to build a state where all people are welcome. Help us to build a state where all can find a home, dwell in security and peace. Help us to build a state where the future promises hope. Lord, be attentive to our prayer this morning. Remove all fear and confusion. Fill us with good judgment and leadership, for you reward the just and repay the good, now and forever. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing? Nice to see you, too.
Thank you.
Our doctor of the day is Dr. Renee Hinkle from Cheyenne. Welcome, Dr. Hinkle. Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 27th has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Barbudo, Representative Moniz.
We're at that order of business of bills on introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 274.
House Bill 274, introduced by Representative Gingrey.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to alcohol regarding underage drinking.
House Bill 274 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 273.
House Bill 273, introduced by Representative Gingrey.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to duties of care, duty owed to employees of independent contractors.
House Bill 273 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 270.
House Bill 270, introduced by Representative Miller.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to taxation and revenue, electricity production taxation.
House Bill 270 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 272.
House Bill 272, introduced by Representative Hallinan.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to taxation and revenue, ethanol tax credit.
House Bill 272 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 275.
House Bill 275, introduced by Representative Miller.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public utilities, wind turbines, royalty fee.
House Bill 275 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 276.
House Bill 276, introduced by Representative Childers.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Department of Transportation regarding funding material cost increases.
House Bill 276 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 268.
House Bill 268, introduced by the Mineral Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the administration of government regarding the Wyoming Industry Partnership Act.
House Bill 268 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 30.
House Bill 30, introduced by Representative Bagby.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the minimum wage.
House Bill 30 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 271.
House Bill 271, introduced by Representative Berger.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Medicaid, speech, and audiology services.
House Bill 271 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Representative Esquibel.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, please proceed.
In our south balcony, we have Mr. Bell's sixth grade class from Henderson Elementary. Please welcome him to the House.
Welcome, sixth graders, and Mr. Bell. Welcome to the House. We're at the order of business of bills on second reading. Well, apparently we aren't at that order of business. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 38, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Hales, Illaway, Lubno, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, No, Dirk, Sign, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 39, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Hales, Illaway, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, No, Dirks, Lubno. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
We are now at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 26.
House Bill 26, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to circuit court magistrates.
House Bill 26, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 35.
House Bill 35, introduced by Representative Millen, an act relating to election judges.
House Bill 35, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 47.
House Bill 47, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to commercial signage on highways.
House Bill 47, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 48.
House Bill 48, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to game and fish regarding game bird farms raising of sage grouse.
House Bill 48, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 59.
House Bill 59, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to liquor licenses for golf clubs.
House Bill 59, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 60.
House Bill 60, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding sex offenses by corrections personnel.
House Bill 60, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 76.
House Bill 76, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to election code revisions.
House Bill 76, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 83.
House Bill 83, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to governmental immunity regarding public transportation.
House Bill 83, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 84.
House Bill 84, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding economic development and property tax exemption.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 84 and request a favorable consideration. Gentlemen and women of the 60th Legislature, I bring to you an amendment that is a little bit more restrictive than the first amendment that we're delaying, the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment reads that if the lease agreement doesn't generate X number of dollars, why the property is still tax exempt. What I wanted to do is I feel that if there is something built on this property by the private sector and they lease the ground from the public nonprofit, that there should be taxes should be paid on that partial of land that it is leased to, that they've leased rather. So what I do, if you turn and go to page 1 under exemptions, it says the following property is exempt from property taxation: property owned by a community development organization, and after organization you insert this amendment, to the extent the property is not leased for a profit business, period. As used in this paragraph, community development means the organization goes on. So what I've done is I've just said if you lease the property for a if the property is leased for a profit business, it loses its tax exemption. It doesn't affect the entire park, just that partial that it's on. I feel that's the only fair way to do it because it addresses one of the concerns that the good representative from over in Uinta County had yesterday.
Representative Madden.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question to the sponsor of this amendment is what would happen if this was passed, if you have a business incubator and you're renting space to a for-profit company? I can see what you're talking about with the land, but what if you got a building and you're leasing part of that to a business incubator, and you want this business to get off the ground as quick as possible and not have to pay taxes during the time, or have to pay rent that reflects taxes during the time they're in the business incubator.
Representative Hallinan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Seems to me pretty obvious that if it's a for-profit business that can't even make enough profit to pay its property tax, it just doesn't make sense. It would seem that these businesses ought to pay taxes just like anybody else. So if they have got, Community Development Agency has land that is not developed, I can understand not paying property tax on that. But if the property is leased to a profit-making company, supposedly profit-making company, it ought to at least be able to pay its property tax. On and for the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the bringer of this amendment. This is clearly the only business-like way of carrying out this kind of development. Believe it or not, there are applicants for these kinds of things who take advantage of our state programs, and this would just be one more incentive for those imaginative folks who are figuring out ways to gain an advantage through our rather generous taxation system in this state. We are so dependent on so few sources of revenues that we need to be sure that the business that we're trying to attract to the state long-term pays its share. It's not that much. On and in support of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This appears to be a friendly amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? Representative Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in answer to the question about the business incubator, it's a separate thing that probably would have to have a special legislation drafted for it. Might be something that you might want to consider on third reading to do that, but I just didn't want to mess it up. I just wanted it to be clear that if you do a for-profit business, well, that's what we do. Thank you very much. I'll call the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 84, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1, to House Bill 84 has passed. House Bill 84 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 111.
House Bill 111, introduced by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to the Clean Coal Task Force.
House Bill 111 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 112.
House Bill 112, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to economic development regarding workforce housing program.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 112. And what this does, with our action yesterday, we zeroed out the appropriation on this bill. This comes back with a much more modest amount than was originally proposed. It was originally proposed for $40 million. And you might say, well, what can we do with $2.5 million when originally thought it would cost $40 million? But it allows the business council to get started with this program. It would actually, for these, I asked what a medium-sized town, what a project would cost, and they told me about $1.5 million, and that was in Appropriations Committee. They have $1 million that we appropriated before for this program, and then with this $2.5 million, that gives them $3.5 million to do some projects around the state. I think it's a good program that provides for planning, grants, and loans for infrastructure development in the state, and I just would ask for your support for this amendment. I think it's important.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising in support of amendment number one to second reading, I think it does. This puts us into the ball game, and it's much appreciated that we need to show that the state is interested in solving this problem, and this will be a big step in that direction. I urge your support.
Anyone else for their first time? Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would rise in support of this amendment. Folks, about $3.5 million will build you about 10 units, three bedroom, two bath, approximately 1,200 square feet per unit. And that's a start. Support of the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Question being called on second reading amendment number one to House Bill 12. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 112 is passed the House. House Bill number 112 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 113.
House Bill 113, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to the regulation of traffic regarding careless driving.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 113 and ask the body for your favorable consideration. This is adding one word on page two, line one, and that is other in front of persons. And this has to do with the operation of the motor vehicle and the criteria that it creates an unreasonable risk of harm to persons or property, and then if that is the case, the person is guilty of careless driving. I wanted to make sure that the risk of harm was to other persons and property. That would take some of the subjectivity out of it as far as a person being stopped ticketed for this. That they wouldn't be considered in harm of themselves.
Anyone else for their first time on second reading amendment number one? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I consider this to be a very friendly amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Question being called on second reading amendment number one to House Bill 113. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 113 is passed. Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number two to House Bill 113, and I ask for your favorable consideration of this bill. Mr. Speaker and colleagues of this body, what this bill basically does, if you will go to page two, lines 15 and 16, it deletes this new violation of careless driving from 315103 Section A, Romanet number 2. And that simply means that on private property, particularly out in the rural counties, a lot of municipals already have their own ordinances for careless driving within cities. But if you're on private property out in the rural areas, you will not be able to be cited for careless driving, particularly on private property in rural areas. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just point out that part of the reason it was put there is because the concept of this entire bill is to give an option to prosecutors so they don't have to do reckless. How the law presently works is if someone is driving erratically, the only option is to charge with reckless driving, which is almost a very serious charge, close to penalty-wise like a DUI. So the concept of this bill was to provide a lesser charge of careless. The difficulty is that There's five different charges. that do not just simply apply on highways. They apply on anywhere in the state of Wyoming. One of those actually being DUI. A DUI, you can be ticketed anywhere in the state. Reckless driving, anywhere in the state. And those other ones are those 1101 through 1112. That's failure to report an accident. And I just can't remember what 225 is off the top of my head. But here's the problem. So you're leaving a prosecutor with the only option is to charge with reckless, where in this quiver he could have had careless and offered a lesser charge. So by taking this out, by adopting this amendment, you're actually making it much tougher on private property and easier on the highways. And I don't think that was the objective. We're trying to provide a lesser charge for the prosecutor to charge. They wouldn't have to do reckless. And by adopting this amendment, you're forcing the prosecutor to have to do the tougher charge. So I would urge you to defeat this amendment.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think just because we have a bad law in the books that says you can be charged with reckless driving on your own private property doesn't mean we should go ahead and add careless driving to that problem also. I can think of lots of situations and circumstances where many people drive carelessly and recklessly on their own private property, and they're not endangering anyone but themselves. And it boils down to a private property right. So we ought to come back and take reckless out too, in my opinion, on in support of the amendment.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question, and maybe somebody can answer it before we get on the second, because I realize the sponsor of the amendment cannot talk more than twice, and I might want to get back up again. Are we talking just private property, or are we talking also, are county roads included in these sections?
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I always knew this would come out someday, so here it is. My best friend is the owner of a very large ranch, and we used to revel at some of the things that we did on that private property. And one day when we were reveling about that, my partner at the time pointed out that it's against the law to drive drunk on your own land. Came as quite a shock, and I've given a lot of thought to that. Should you be allowed to drive drunk on your own land, or should you not? What is the proper public policy there? And I did like this amendment that made it clear that what we're talking about is harm to other persons, and I think as a matter of public policy, when you're talking about other persons, it shouldn't matter where you are. The essence of the offense is careless operation of a motor vehicle. What difference does it make what the ownership of the property is, whether it's a public right-of-way, private land, or any number of myriad other combinations of land ownership that we have in this state? I don't think it relates to the ownership of the land. I think it relates to the ownership of the motor vehicle, and especially as that operation of a motor vehicle may harm others. And so after reflection, very reluctantly I might add, I came to the conclusion that the public policy was probably correct as to drunken driving, and for the same reason I'd say that I think the public policy is correct as to careless driving. And so I am in opposition to the amendment and in favor of the bill.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have a quick comment on this amendment, because originally in committee I was in support of the concept of removing careless driving from private property. And then I thought about the oil patch. And in the oil patch, we have lots of vehicles driving all over private property that do not belong to the property owner. And I can tell you from personal experience that I've witnessed a lot of careless, perhaps reckless driving that is a threat to livestock, a threat to the people who live there. And if so, I think as a matter of public policy, we have to recognize that there is careless driving that occurs on private land that is a hazard. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for their second time? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to have a chance to point out, I think it would be extremely rare for a prosecutor ever to charge someone on their own property. They probably wouldn't stand for re-election. Where this is getting at is subdivision roads, parking lots of a grocery store, those type of locations. What happens is maybe, you know, the officer is following a kid that is driving, erratically, and actually you end up catching him in the parking lot of a grocery store, and then the argument is, well, I wasn't on a highway of the state. I was on private property. I was in the parking lot of this grocery store. Or I was driving erratically within a subdivision, which is not an official highway, and to answer the one question, county roads would be covered under highway, so that's not really a concern. But it's that concern that and it's fine to take this out. Essentially what you're doing is you're making it clear under policy of the state of Wyoming, we want to be extremely tough on people on their private property rather than giving the lesser charge. So just to make that clear.
Anyone else for their second time? Madam Majority Whip for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is in fact a policy decision. And it's not about do you want to make it tougher. It's do you want to give latitude to the private property owner that careless driving is something that's going to be excluded from this, that if in fact we are going to charge on private property, it is going to be something for more serious. That would raise the bar higher than just simply careless driving. So I guess you can look at it both ways. From my perspective, I think that careless driving should be excluded from private property. So it is a policy decision this body is making. Do you want to make it more difficult, or do you want to raise the bar a little bit when you do prosecute crimes on private property? It has to be for something more serious, not just simply careless driving. In my mind, that is the issue here. So I'm on and in favor of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We are on second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 13. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 113 has failed. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, don't stand. Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 113 is passed. House Bill 113 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186.
House Bill 186, introduced by Representative Anderson, an act relating to fuel tax regarding gasoline tax agriculture exemption.
House Bill 186, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, would you please come up? The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 190.
House Bill 190, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to suspension of driver's licenses for non-payment of child support.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. I move second reading amendment to House Bill 190 and ask for your favorable consideration. This is the bill on where the department can take your driver's license away from you for non-support of child payment. I just want you to know that I am against the entire bill, but in the fact that the majority of the people yesterday voted in favor of it, I wanted to make this a level playing field. And to do that, I'm bringing this amendment. It is on page 3, line 14. It basically says now that when a person becomes $5,000 in arrears and 90 days in default, then the department can go after your driver's license. I am submitting that we delete the $5,000 part of it. And the reason I'm suggesting that and what would leave is just the fact that in 90 days, if you haven't paid a child payment, that they can come after your driver's license, is it makes an unfair playing field. If your child payments are $1,000 or $2,000 a month compared to someone whose payments are $300 a month, you're going to hit that trigger very, very quick. So in 90 days, you will already be at that 5,000 figure, or in 120 days. But if your payment is for $300, it may take you 2 to 3 years before that trigger kicks in. And we all know in business that the longer a debt goes in arrears, the harder it is to collect. And if the true intention in my thought of the department wanting to be able to go after these people, they need to be able to go after them quick and swift. And for that reason, I would ask for your support on this amendment.
Representative.
Thank you.
Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I appreciate that. I certainly rise in support of this amendment. Testimony in the committee did not disclose that there was any particular monetary amount we had to look at from the DFS. DFS came in and they wanted the driver's license type revocation as one of their tools to work with. However, when I talked to them about the monetary part, it wasn't an issue with them. So this clears that up, and we look at the time element here. And if you reflect back yesterday when we were debating this legislation, we handed out information, disclosed the amount that was due on this child support. And, of course, this will allow them to go forward. We don't anticipate collecting much that is past occurrences, but nevertheless, removing that dollar amount out of there and going on the time element, it makes this a more viable bill. I certainly encourage the body to vote for this amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and against second reading amendment number one. That goes to subsection F on page 3 of the bill, which is the administrative suspension that the court has nothing to do with. I thought the idea of the bill was to back up a step and say, if you owe less than $5,000, you could be suspended by the court. If you owe more than $5,000, you can be suspended administratively by the department under subsection F. Now we're going to no threshold for the administrative suspension, and I'm not in favor of that. And I wanted to make one comment in terms of suspension of driver's licenses. We used to have a driving under suspension statute that had a penalty of an automatic 6-month suspension of your driver's license. And that we changed that statute and repealed that automatic suspension. And now it's just like other misdemeanors where it's a maximum of $750 fine or 6 months in jail. There is no longer an automatic suspension, again, of driving under, for the crime of driving under suspension, because it's, you know, piling on, as it was referred to by our circuit court judge or a municipal court judge, the death spiral. And that's exactly what it was for these folks who kept getting their driver's licenses suspended. The point was made yesterday that you can suspend these licenses and these people will drive. And I agree with that, and I see that all the time. So I'd say, let's stick with the original intent of the bill that makes it harder to suspend it below $5,000 and then leave the administrative authority with the department if it's above $5,000. Thanks.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am speaking against the amendment and against the bill. We already have a statute out there, 31-7-128, that addresses this. This was prompted by a federal mandate. Again, that's the federal government sticking their nose in our business, which is another case that I really don't appreciate. But back to the amendment in the bill, we're not taking into account that these people that are in this position have just recently gone through a divorce, probably a traumatic divorce. In some cases, they have chosen to not contest this, so they are at the mercy of the court and all the other things that become attached to this. And these costs accrue, and they are forced to pay these as the court seems necessary at the end of the ruling. So you could look at an individual who could walk out of a divorce decree with $100,000 in debt, with no way to pay that. And then all the other things, his whole life, losing his family, et cetera, has basically been mulched. And then we're going to come and add on the top of this, if you don't pay us, we're going to come and suspend your license. So then that makes you not able to go out and pursue work. And one other little quick caveat to that is, if you go out and apply for a job, on most applications there is a blank on there that asks you if you've ever had your license suspended. Now think about that as potential employers, those people who check that box. You've just relegated those people to probably have their application tossed into the round file. So the implications of this are really broad-reaching, and they go beyond what we need to address here. So on and against the amendment, on and against the bill.
Anybody else for their first time? Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. The bill and the law as it stands, whether the bill passes or not, continues to allow court-ordered suspension of driver's licenses for any amount. The Department of Family Services recommended the $5,000 amount, I think for administrative reasons. They felt they could handle the quantity of those cases. It's a policy call as to where the body wants to go in terms of the amount. I've received some email today suggesting that zero is a fairer number. I certainly understand that, but I think it's important for the body to understand, first of all, that court-ordered suspensions, there's no amount. Second of all, under the existing law, for administrative suspensions, there's no trigger threshold. And finally, even if this amendment does pass, someone would still have to not make a payment for 90 days. So that safeguard would remain in the bill, and I think that's an important safeguard. With regard to various divorce horror stories, I think it's important for the body finally to understand that this applies to child support orders, not property settlements, alimony, or whatever it's called these days, maintenance. we don't have alimony anymore. But any other debt from a divorce. This only applies to child support orders that are within the jurisdiction of the Department of Family Services. Not every child support order out there is under the jurisdiction of the Department of Family Services.
Anybody else for the first time? Representative Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While I do sympathize with the divorced fathers, I think what we're talking about is child support. And there are children out there that need this money for food, for doctor bills, for clothing, for things like that. So I don't think we want to forget that this is child support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hales. Anybody else for their first time? Representative Sponsor Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the amendment, I think I'm against the bill altogether, but I'll keep listening. I just had some questions, because the way I read it, I think, is a little bit different than the speaker reads it. And on page 2 in Romanet 2, it basically talks about the department or the court may, and then subsection B talks about what the court can do, but subsection F does talk about what the department can do. And so we're still looking at the department, which I assume is Family Services in this case, correct me if I'm wrong, has the determination to decide to go after them if it's more than 5,000. And I guess I truly don't believe there should be a number. If it's egregious, they should probably be able to go after them. If it's 4,500 and they believe that they should, I don't think we should have a numerical threshold in the bill. The only other thing I wanted to say is that 20% of this state are single fathers, and that in some cases we will and are talking about, I guess, deadbeat mothers. We never seem to hear that word, but I'd ask you to keep that in mind. We're not always talking about these horrible fathers that aren't paying their child support. In some case, it is the other paternity. Thank you.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and against the amendment, and fairly much in favor of the bill. You know, folks, this is a course of action of last and final resort. This isn't an individual, a mother or a father, that has been recently divorced. This is someone that has taken the thing to the final limits. You know, the bill is for those that have failed in their responsibilities and for a goodly period of time. And there is due process in this thing. There is 60 days. There is a temporary license can be obtained for a period of time. There is some due process within the bill, but I can't talk about that. What this would do, basically, is put anybody that is in arrears for 90 days. Things happen to people. I agree with the representative from Laramie County to a point that things happen to people and in the first period of time, something like that. But this would say that anybody that is in arrears for 90 days is going to be have the hammer over their head for the elimination or suspension of a driver's license. You know, folks, until a better idea comes along, what recourse do Wyoming families that are looking for support have? If we take an individual that is shirking in their responsibility, it doesn't matter which gender they are, what would they be paying if they were living at home? I mean, you know, this is a very, very tough issue. But what recourse do we have until somebody has a better idea? On and against the amendment.
Anybody else for the first time? For the second time? Before the sponsor? Anybody else? Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Sponsor.
Thank you, Speaker Pro Tem. I would like to mention that this isn't an automatic take your driver's license away. What the department wants to do is for these people to make contact with the department so they can come up with a payment plan or figure out what other extenuating circumstances may be happening. Now, if I'm paying rent on a house and I'm behind 90 days, I'm out of there. I suppose the other point that I would like to make with the $5,000 limit, those families, in my opinion, that need the money the most are going to be the ones that aren't going to get to it for 2 or 3 years. Those families that are living on child support payments of $300 or $400 a month are the ones that really desperately need it. They're the ones trying to figure out how to pay the groceries. Those that are receiving $1,500 a month, they could probably cut a few corners if they had to. So I would just encourage you that if it is the wish of this body to pass this bill, as I mentioned, I am against the bill, but if it is the wish of this body to pass the bill, then let's put some teeth into it. If you're late, you're late. If you're 90 days late, you're late. You shouldn't have an exemption because you're only paying $300 a month, so that gives you 5 years before you fall under the department's rules, as compared to somebody who's paying $1,000 or $2,000 a month who could come under their rules immediately. And for that, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I would call for the question.
Thank you. Question being called, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 190, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion failed. Okay. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I move second.
Division was called. Okay. All those in favor, please stand. Second reading amendment number 1.
Eleven.
Opposed? Motion failed. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I move second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 190. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go to page 4 of the bill, line 3, what I'm attempting to do here is to clarify that that no suspension would take place unless the obligor, the person who owes the child support, had received this notice that is referenced on line 3 and then subparagraph H. So at page 4, line 3, it clarifies that says 60 days after the date the obligor receives the notice, unless the obligor, now they would be suspended 60 days after they receive the notice. It clarifies when that suspension would take place, 60 days from their receipt of it. And then it says on line 5, you've got Romanet 1 that stays as it is, and then the amendment adds Romanet 2 enters into a payment plan approved by the department, and it adds another Romanet 3, or is in full compliance with a court-ordered payment plan. That takes account those decrees that have been issued a year after the divorce started, and there are arrears, and they can be $5,000 arrears. But if the court says you pay those arrears, you pay your current support, and then you pay $50 a month in arrears, and if the person is in compliance with that plan, they shouldn't be suspended. It clarifies that you have three exemptions from the suspension. You pay the entire arrearage, you've entered into a payment plan approved by the department, or you're in compliance with a court-ordered payment plan. And believe me, just because the court may say, here's your payment plan, and the department may say, we don't like that. But the judge is the ultimate authority on those things, and he can say, well, I'm going to go along with what's being recommended. And so there are those two elements that you need to address. And that full compliance with a court-ordered payment plan is consistent with the language on page 6, line 11 of the bill that I further amended by this amendment. Now this says a person who's granted limited driving privileges under this section by the district court or the department shall not be granted an extension, etc., unless they've made full payments or they're in full compliance with the payment plan approved by the department or ordered by the court. So it makes the bill consistent. And I stand for any questions on the amendment.
Representative Thrum.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, this is a friendly amendment, and I thank the Speaker for bringing it, and I would urge everyone's support. Okay.
Anybody else? Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 190, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. House Bill 190 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 207.
House Bill 207, introduced by Representative Carson, an act relating to game and fish regarding internet hunting.
House Bill 207 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Representative Esquibel.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
In the south balcony, we have Mrs. Ketchum's 6th grade class from Henderson Elementary. Please welcome them to the house.
Welcome to the House of Representatives, 6th graders. We are at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move the third reading consent list consisting of House Bills 1692, 110, 149, 182, and 221.
Will the reading clerk please read the consent list bills?
House Bill 16, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to food safety regarding cottage food industry. being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Oh,
House Bill 92, introduced by Representative Landon, an act relating to Medicaid long-term care partnership program.
Thanks.
Being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 110, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to economic development, Wyoming Business Ready Community Program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 149, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to notaries, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 182, introduced by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to limited liability companies, low-profit ones, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 221, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to property taxation appeals, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Would anyone like to remove a bill from the consent list? Right. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers. Cohey,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer, Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 ayes. As to House Bill 16, are there any changes? Are there any changes? As to House Bill 16, Zwanitzer Dan, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dave, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 58 ayes, 2 noes. As to House Bill 92, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Patton, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 59 ayes, 1 no. As to House Bill 110, are there any changes? Teeters, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Wallace, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 55 ayes, 5 noes. As to House Bill 149, are there any changes? Zwanitzer Dave, aye to no. Dirks, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dan, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. McComey, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Hammonds, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Simlick, aye to no. Are there additional changes? The vote is closed, 51 ayes, 9 noes. As to House Bill 182, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 ayes. As to House Bill 221, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 16, 92, 110, 149, 182, and 221 have passed the House. Would call for any re-referrals at this time. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to refer House Bill 181 and re-refer House Bill 132, both dealing with fair employment practices, to Committee Number 7, Corporations.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We are at that item of business of bills of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We are resolved into committee of the whole. Representative Connolly.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill, House Bill 141, for our consideration is House Bill 141. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to driving under the influence, impaired driving prevention amendments. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Korberg, Throne, No, Peasley. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 141 do pass, and I'll hold off on the Standing Committee for amendment for a moment, and I will go ahead and start the explanation, then I'll come back to the Standing Committee amendment. You'll have two handouts are on your desk from yesterday. One of them has statistics on the front dealing with DUI. The other one simply says DUI HB 141 at the top. I could just start with the first one, the one with statistics on the front. This came from the Wyoming Department of Transportation. I would point out to you, if you are looking at this and you're wondering why 2008 is so low, it's because they actually don't get in the data until at least June or July. They finish out their data. So it's not as if we had a huge fall off on DUIs in 2008. YDOT just does not have the data yet. So I just wanted to point that out to you before you start looking at that. On the other document that talks about what this bill does, let me start with this. Why do we even need to make these changes? Throughout the years, we bring DUI bills every year, two or three at a time, maybe even more. The difficulty is that we've come at this situation very piecemeal. We bring one bill here that changes one little word, or we'll bring another bill that just deals with the one little issue. What I've done here is brought a comprehensive bill, taken everything that would fix the DUI bill, put it all into one bill so you can see it in context. One of the difficulties sometimes when looking at a piecemeal bill, it sounds like a good idea. The difficulty is that you don't see it in full context of what implications it may have on the remainder of the bill. In particular, we've seen quite a lot of bills dealing with the increase in penalties. I don't actually believe that increasing penalties has much effect one way or the other on decreasing DUI. The important part to decrease a DUI is to use those programs that have been shown to scientifically reduce the number of DUIs.
that's what we've tried to do here, is to bring those in here, those type of ideas. So I'll walk you through, and it's easier than walking through the bill. It's easier if you have this document. It's sort of this document that says DUI HB 141 at the top. It starts with, what does this bill do? And that's actually an easier document to walk through to see all the different things this bill attempts to do. One of the first things this bill does is brings in some new definitions. One of the new definitions you'll see there is controlled substance. Right now, a controlled substance is defined as anything in the schedules. We have schedules. They're called schedules. They're schedule 1, 2, 3. It's different levels of different types of drugs in Wyoming. So clearly, if you are driving under a controlled substance, that's what we, if they're in the schedule, they're a controlled substance. If you're driving with a controlled substance in your body, and there's a two-prong test here, you can be driving actually under medication. It has to be impairing your driving. So two things. You have to have a controlled substance and impairing your driving. The second definition under controlled substance is just glue. There was a problem years ago, and they brought that as one of these piecemeal attachments, that if you're sniffing glue or vapor of some sort. What this does, it brings in a third category, and that is any type of drug that is impairing your ability to drive that is not a controlled substance. The one that has become quite prevalent is what's called gypsum root. Gypsum root, kids take, it gets them high, and then they drive, and it impairs their ability to drive. So that's that new definition. We also clarify what we mean by alcohol. We had a definition in there for chemical test and chemical test refusal. You'll see through the amendment that actually comes out, but I'll explain that to you in a moment. Anyway, a chemical test is, just so you understand how a DUI sort of works, an officer pulls up on an individual. For some reason, the officer has reasonable suspicion to believe that that driver, there's something that they have violated, a criminal violation, such as you are swerving from lane to lane, you don't have your lights on, something like that. So they pull you over. They will talk to you. Usually what they're looking for is bloodshot eyes. They're looking for slurred speech. They're looking for your inability to answer questions. They will then ask you to come out of the car, and they will begin what's called field sobriety tests. This is where they'll do the horizontal gaze nystagmus. They'll, you've seen it on TV, walk the line type of thing. And they'll give you potentially what's called an alco-sensor. That is a device that they use on the road. Now, that number that it gives them is not evidence, but it helps them to know whether or not you have been drinking. At some point, the officer makes the determination to place you under arrest for DUI. Once you're placed under arrest for DUI, then you're transported back to the jail. At the jail is actually where they get your blood alcohol level in a machine called an intoximeter. So that's when we talk about what a chemical test is. It's either blowing into an intoximeter, that would be your breath, or urine, or blood. You have three different ways of obtaining the blood alcohol level. And then we also deal with the definition of drive. I actually didn't change the definition of drive. I was just trying to clean up the bill so it read better. We always say drive or be under actual physical control. I just stuck actual physical control into the definition of drive so it's not getting repeated over and over within the bill. Those are the definitions. The next thing that comes in is what's called a time of test rule. Wyoming is one of only 18 states that does not have a time of test rule. What this deals with, and there's a whole explanation in your packet I gave you, there's a very nice white paper put together that describes in detail the pros and cons to time of test rule. Essentially, it's this. In Wyoming, right now the law is we need to know what was your blood alcohol level at the time of driving. The difficulty is that we don't actually find that out until we've gotten you back to the jail and you've blown in the intoximeter. Difficulty is in many of our smaller communities, it takes a while to get back to the jail. The defendant then, this is one of the loopholes, they can bring in
The chemical testing folks from Cheyenne, they travel to the trial, and they have to do what's called extrapolating. They do these formulas, and then they extrapolate backwards in time, depending on your weight and on your sex, and taking other factors, and they try to come up with what was your blood alcohol at the time of driving. What this does is says that we will take the test within 2 hours. And presently under our law, we actually have a three-hour rule already in the statutes for boating, and this just brings it into vehicles, too, and makes it at 2 hours. The next thing it does, it brings in failure to submit becomes a crime. However, you'll see through the amendment, the standing committee amendment, it changes a little bit. If you refuse, let's say you say, I don't want to take the test, the punishment right now under the law is that you lose your driver's license. Now, the reason we're allowed to do that is because we have something in this state called implied consent. By you agreeing to have a driver's license from us, you're agreeing and consenting, implicitly, that if you refuse to take a test when we ask you to take a test, you lose your driver's license. There's still, this concept is already in the law that you're being punished for refusing to take a test. What many states have moved toward is actually criminalizing refusal. That way, it cuts down on the number of refusals. And so what you end up with is a separate and distinct crime of refusal. You'll see in the standing committee amendment, the committee took that out. But I wanted to make sure you understood what that one was also. The next thing, and it's on the, you have to turn the page there, creating aggravated DUI. When you look at the statistics and the scientific data, the people that are causing the most deaths and most injuries are those that have high BAC. When we say high BAC, we're talking above 0.15. Now remember, in the state of Wyoming, 0.08 is the number. What we're saying is, if you're a 0.15 or more, that's going to be an aggravated DUI. And what that's going to translate into is the punishment increases if you if you're convicted of an aggravated DUI, meaning that your BAC was more than 0.15. Here's how the punishment works. Take whatever we do, and I'm going to call it a regular DUI to distinguish it from an aggravated DUI. So if a regular DUI, the punishment for a first-time offense is X, and a second for a second offense on a regular DUI is another amount. Well, better way to explain this. If you get convicted on a first-time offense of an aggravated DUI, it's going to be the same penalty as if you were getting a second offense on a regular DUI. Okay? The next change you'll see there is dismissal of charges. Presently, prosecutors are required to go into court and explain why they're reducing or dismissing a DUI charge. I remove that out of the bill. Presently, we have evidentiary presumptions. That comes out of the bill. And then lastly, you'll see, there's two more to go. Ignition interlocks. It mandates ignition interlocks on a second offense or on a first offense of an aggravated DUI. And then lastly, we changed the look-backs on convictions. Those are all the things in the bill that it does. And let me explain the third page real quick. This is penalties for DUI. And what I've done is walked through and shown you on each offense what the present law is and what the proposed bill does. You'll see there on a regular DUI, so we're not talking the aggravated, present law, in the proposed bill, no change. It's 750, 6 months in jail. Again, those are all maximums. It is extremely rare that you would ever see anyone actually go to jail on a first-time offense. And the other part you have to understand also is, in the state of Wyoming, a first offense is almost always your second offense. Because we have something in the law called a deferral. It's 713.301. You'll hear people say all the time, don't burn your 301, meaning don't waste your 301 on that crime. Hold it for a different crime that's more serious. You're allowed to use a 301 on a myriad of different crimes. But essentially what it is, the prosecutor says, yes, you're guilty, you're agreeing, you're guilty to it. But you know what? I'm going to defer it. And if you do all these things on this list, at the end of 6 months, I'll dismiss the charge like it never happened. And the things on the list are usually the same things that you would have been punished almost the same on a first-time DUI if you'd gone to court, such as you're going to go get a substance abuse assessment, you're going to pay a fine, and then at the end of 6 months, if you've not gotten any more trouble, they dismiss the charge. So in Wyoming, on a first offense DUI, if you're convicted on first offense, it's very likely that's actually really your second offense, and your first offense, your true first offense, was actually ended up being a deferral. We try to keep, this is the other philosophy of the state of Wyoming, we try to keep the punishments on first and second and even into third low. The reason being is what we're trying to do is help that person. You're trying to find out, does this person have an alcohol problem, a drug problem? How can we help this person so they're not recidivists? Because there's two people that we worry about the most, the high BAC people and recidivists. It's recidivists that kill people, people that are repeating the crime over and over. So what we try to do on first and second in particularly is do a lot of substance abuse assessments, try to get them into treatment, get them into drug courts, and try to set this person on a good path. So you'll see there on second offense, and it's a second offense within 5 years of the offense, of the first offense. And the only change there is changing the jail time from 6 months to a year. Again, those are maximums. Very rare to see anybody getting more than the mandatory 7 days. Right now in the law, a second offense, it's a mandatory 7 days in jail. On a third offense, and this is, there is a change in the look back, it goes from 5 years to 10 years. So it's a third offense within 10 years of your second offense. And the only change there again is changing 6 months to 1 year. And again, that one, this isn't changing it, but the present law, it's a mandatory 30 days on your third offense. However, it can be reduced down to 15 days if you agree to go to inpatient treatment. And then on a fourth offense, and again, here's a change. It's right now, the present law is within 5 years of your third. I'm saying within a lifetime. So if you get a fourth offense within a lifetime, it's going to be a felony, and it's presently a felony. And I'm changing it from a two-year felony to a five-year felony. So not a huge amount of changes in the penalty for part, but a few. And then there again at the bottom, it explains the aggravated DUI punishments. I tried to walk through the bill as quickly as I could because it's probably easiest if I just answer questions. I will go ahead at this point and move the standing committee amendment. Madam Chair, I move standing committee amendment number one, and I'll explain the standing committee amendment. What that does, the committee decided that they did not agree with the concept of criminalizing a refusal. And so one of the things the amendment does is removes that part of the bill. So where we had been talking about, if you do a refusal, you refuse to take the test, right now your punishment is you lose your driver's license. What we were trying to do is turn that into a crime, and so it would criminalize that refusal. The standing committee amendment takes that out of the bill. The other thing the amendment does, right now in the state of Wyoming, if you, and we sort of had this discussion earlier this morning on a different bill, a DUI anywhere in the state, even off of a state highway or a county road, is a crime. Where it gets interesting is, so that you can convict on. However, none of the driver's license stuff applies. So you could potentially refuse a test in a Safeway or a grocery store parking lot, and there is no punishment because you're not on a highway. But if you agreed to take the test, then you would be convicted of DUI, which is sort of a strange problem we have in there. What I was trying to do was to make them consistent. The committee decided to keep it, the inconsistency, in there. So that part's in there. I think that was the two major changes. We made a few minor changes as to, on the amendment, you'll see a strike through at the bottom on the first page. That was actually in the bill twice, and we were just making sure it wasn't there twice. And I think that's everything on the amendment. And we certainly can have a discussion on whether or not criminalizing the refusal should come out or stay in. And I'd entertain any questions about the amendment.
Thank you. Chair Elloway. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I really don't have any problem with the amendment. I just like the bill.
Representative Goggles.
I would like the sponsor of the amendment to review the inconsistency once more. I'm a little confused.
Chair Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize, I did go sort of fast with that. In our present law, if we saw, actually it's great because we talked about this earlier, there are, I think, five different moving violations that can occur that you can be charged with and convicted of where you are not on a state highway. One being fleeing a police officer, one being failure to report a accident, one being reckless driving, and one being DUI. Meaning that if the officer pulls you over in a parking lot of a grocery store, you don't get out of it because you don't get to say, well, I wasn't on a state highway, I wasn't driving on a state highway. They can say, well, you were, but how did you get to this grocery store parking lot? But that's a different question. But so the crime has been committed within a parking lot. That person can actually be convicted of a DUI. What they cannot happen to them is if they refuse to take the test, so they're a refusal, so you're not going to get a conviction on that person probably unless you have other evidence of some sort. So primarily this person's going to skate on a DUI. In most situations, if they did a refusal out on the highway, they would lose their driver's license. On this parking lot example, they would not lose their driver's license because they're not on a highway. That was what I was trying to clean up, but I could see, but the committee felt that inconsistency should remain.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chair Elloway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I noticed on the handout that the good chairman of Judiciary handed out that on the second page it says drunk driving offenders will repeat. About one-third of all drivers arrested for drunk driving each year are repeat drunk driving offenders. In the capital city, the local newspaper does print blotter briefs, and you see this often, that these folks have been picked up for DUI, and they could be either multiple times in the week or multiple times in the year, but you certainly start to remember names if you take a look at those blotter briefs. And I applaud you. I'm sorry that your penalties aren't stricter, especially for the second offense. I think that if you're picked up once, that ought to be a warning to you. But these folks are getting picked up multiple times, and where it says second offense within 5 years and so forth, I think that's giving a lot of leeway. I'd like to see it stricter. I think that you get a second offense within 1 year, you ought to be hammered. It's just like sex offense. I don't think there's any leeway. You certainly know it, and you ought to be taken off the highway.
Chair McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I'd like the body to realize that there was a lot of work over the interim went into this bill. There was a lot of people involved in this. And one of the things that I was particularly interested in was the part about the ignition lock. In our particular county, there are a lot of people involved in accidents and a lot of people killed. And the drivers are drunk drivers with suspended licenses. Just because you suspend somebody's license doesn't mean they're not going to quit driving. And this is a device. There's some costs and there's some consequences to it. And they've really become sophisticated, and maybe the sponsor later on could give us a little bit of a talk. I know I don't want to kill a bunch of bills, but they're very, very, getting very, very good and very, very sophisticated. And I'd just like to thank everybody, including the sponsor, that worked on this bill. There were conference calls around the state. There were all kinds of things went on. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm on and for this bill.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. The first one has to do with the new approach with aggravated DUI. With regard to that one in particular, my concern is with the first offense automatically becoming a second offense and an automatic 7 days in jail. And so what I would like to know is this modeled after other states that brought it on? What were the consequences of that? I understand the significance of a 0.15 BAC, but to do that on a first offense to make it an automatic 7 days in jail, I think is something that I need more information on. And I will hold my second question until after receiving the answer on the first.
Chair Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to answer some of the questions that have come up so far. There was the question as to why perhaps the penalties weren't a little stricter, and it sort of plays into what the good gentleman from Lander was talking about. I just bring the bill. Much smarter people than I actually wrote most of this. The chief executive of our state called forward a council of people and gathered together these folks throughout the state, quite a lot of them, and stakeholders from different points of view, brought together liquor industry, brought together defense attorneys, folks that all would have different views on this issue, and came up with what are the best ideas out there, what are other states doing, what could our state be doing to close a lot of these loopholes. Because the difficulty is not always the penalty part. We don't even get to talk about the penalty if you don't get the conviction. Getting the conviction is the important part to begin with. And in many situations in Wyoming, we never actually get the conviction because we have so many loopholes built into our DUI statutes. So we can certainly talk about making stricter penalties. What the consensus somewhat was, and the good gentleman from Lander was on one of these conference calls that we had this summer, was let's get through what we can get through. Let's be realistic. Let's bring what works for Wyoming. There are some states like South Dakota that has gone to what some would consider a much more extreme example. They don't even have implied consent anymore. They actually just they take your sample immediately. So that certainly is an issue, the penalty part, and why, you know, the stringency. And I think the last speaker raised a good issue as to why we didn't go with more stringency, because, you know, here's someone now talking about, you know, maybe we're being too stringent. So we tried to find a balance. With aggravated DUI, the reason you want to get in there quickly, especially on it, and make that a more serious charge, is those are the people who are actually causing the deaths and the injuries. In many situations, on a first-time DUI or a deferral, you're dealing with someone that just made a mistake. You're never going to see that person in a court of law ever again. They didn't realize how much they had drank. They got out there, and that's why we have a deferral program, so that these people don't get that on their record. But what we're talking about with aggravated, to get to a 0.15, you're barely able to move the vehicle. I mean, it's not as if you're a little buzzed. It's you're going to kill someone or injure someone extremely seriously. That 7 days in jail is definitely a wake-up call. But more importantly, I think what's wonderful about the state of Wyoming and our philosophy toward DUIs is that we try to help the person at those initial stages with getting them into drug courts, getting them into treatment of some sort, and finding out, do you have an alcohol or drug problem, and how can we help you with that, so you're not back out there committing more aggravated DUIs.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On page 2, or page 4, and again on page 13, there's the language as measured within 2 hours after the time of driving. And my concern is that we're creating a loophole that allows people to escape prosecution if they're not measured. I guess the question is, what happens if the blood alcohol content is not measured within 2 hours after the time of driving, and is there a way we could polish that language?
Representative Gingrey.
Excellent question, and it is actually covered. If you flip over to on page 3 at the bottom, lines 20 and 21, what we've done here is said under B, no person shall drive any vehicle within the state if the person, and then we list three different options. One option being has an alcohol concentration of 0.08 or more. So in the example just given, the prosecutor would probably go under that one because that was not measured potentially within the 2 hours, but was measured in some manner that they could extrapolate backwards. Or the prosecutor could go out under Romanet 3, which simply says to a degree which renders the offender incapable of safely driving. That one's a more difficult one for prosecutors because you have to put on a lot of evidence that's not the evidence of an intoximeter. You're putting on evidence of other convincing evidence, I would assume. So that I believe has actually covered that question.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I don't think anyone in here thinks we're being too lenient on drunk drivers, and I also support the bill in concept that we need some more punishment. I do have two questions, though, for the good bringer of the bill. The first is on public street or highway. You'll notice we're taking that language out, and I believe it's probably so if there's a drunk driver in a vehicle anytime, anywhere. I believe that's maybe the philosophy behind it, but if he could go in a little bit why we're taking that phrase out 4 or 5 times in statute. And the other real concern I have is on page 20 and 21 on ignition interlock devices. We seem to be mandating these now. And I guess my question is, I know what a controversial issue this was 2 years ago to even, you know, take the first step towards these devices, but now we're going to start mandating them. Well, at least it says we shall apply to the department. Is the department then obligated to approve this request? What happens if they don't? And is the person being punished then at their own cost being required to provide for one of these on their vehicle? I understand these aren't cheap, $100 to $150. And last time I knew, there was only 3 or 4 places in the state you could actually get this on your car. So if you're in the Bighorn Basin, you're driving 300-400 miles to Casper, I think was the nearest spot at least last year, to mandate to get one of these on your vehicle. So if he could talk about why we're mandating those, who's paying for them, if they have to be approved or if it's automatic, and then maybe about the public street and highway provision as well. Thank you.
Chair Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had some wonderful testimony from the Wyoming Department of Transportation, and it's really wonderful the way Wyoming decided to go about this. What we did was do ignition interlocks voluntarily to begin with. We started the program so we could roll it out, sort of see how it worked, get some data, see where the problems were in the system, and work those problems out. The report back from YDOT is it's been a success with, you know, he gave us some examples of a few minor issues. How this works, and his testimony was, and hopefully someone from the committee has a better memory than I, but I thought his testimony was that these are throughout the state. The YDOT has licensed providers throughout the state to do it, and I think his testimony was that you pay a one-time fee up front to install it, and then you pay something like $70 a month as a fee to have it monitored, because then you have to come in once a month and have it downloaded onto their computer. And what the download does, it tells you how many times you tried to circumvent the system, if you tried to hotwire it or if you tried to go around it, if you ever got in and actually blew hot. All that stuff gets downloaded every month when they come in. YDOT seemed to be optimistic about the program. And the mandatory, again, would only be on a second DUI, not in a first, or a first on an aggravated. And the second question, the public highways thing. I'm not sure how I can explain it any better than I think I've explained it now two times, and I must be doing a poor job of explaining it. You got two different concepts in the law. You got the criminal violation of a DUI. A DUI right now in the state of Wyoming can be charged anywhere in the state, whether you're on a public highway or not. The punishment of a refusal has to be, the punishment of being removing your driver's license has to be on a public street or highway. That's how, through that amendment that we just passed, that's how we're leaving it. We're leaving everything in place. We're not making any change. That's the best I can do on that one.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an unusual situation in which I find myself. If everyone would turn to page 21 of the bill, that is the portion that deals with the ignition interlock devices. And fundamentally, all the bill is doing is changing the word may to the word shall, in terms of these being mandatory. I have been working with a good representative from the other body of the Wyoming State Legislature, and we've been working for months on this issue just of ignition interlock device. And as that bill works its way through the other body, I took it out of my desk. It has 20 pages dealing with just this one portion. So I commend the simplicity of what we have before us, but the implementation and the way in which it happens is quite complex. And so we have an interesting situation in front of us. Do you amend the entire bill that I have in terms of the implementation of this, or do we move forward? To add to what has been said with regard to ignition interlock devices, what has happened in New Mexico when they implemented these with first offense DUIs who had a blood alcohol content of 0.15 or higher, they decreased by two-thirds the amount of repeat offenders. And so this is, in terms of, if you do not want drunk drivers on the roads, an ignition interlock device stops them. And so this is a very important part of the bill. But in fact, in terms of how it would be implemented, is there are a number of complexities to it. I would like the bringer of the bill to address how he thinks those could be handled with the existing bill.
First, Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question focuses on, I think you called it the time of testing provision, which is on page 4. It's the Romanet 2 at the top. And as I read that, we are criminalizing essentially getting drunk within 2 hours of driving. And I understand eliminating loopholes, but I'm wondering if we're not opening a can of worms, because under B it says, you know, no person shall drive any vehicle, and then you jump over to 2. If they have measured within 2 hours of driving an blood alcohol content in excess of the 0.08. And, so essentially under the plain terms of the bill, as I understand it, if I'm on my way to a party and I'm driving fast and somebody calls the police and says, hey, this car went by a little too fast, the police show up at the party and it's an hour and a half later, and I've been pounding beers in the meantime. Under this, I'm going to be convicted of drunk driving and have no say about it, no ability to offer a defense on that. And if I'm wrong on that, I need to be set straight. But it does have me concerned, and frankly, it could be a situation, domestic violence. Somebody shows up, and it's been 2 hours since I've been driving, and I'm drunk when they show up. And under this, I could be charged with drunk driving, and I'd have no ability to defend myself. So that's my concern, and if it's misplaced, I want to know that.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to the last question, and that's the primary argument that I get from all the defense lawyers that have taken a look at this bill. And what he's getting at is something called the guzzle defense, and it's a defense that's presently can be used. If presently under the present law, if an officer arrives on a scene and there's been a car accident and there's one car off the side and all the occupants are dead, and you're the driver that caused the accident. You're the drunk driver, and you're sitting there, and you're fine. It's amazing fate that always the drunk driver has a scratch and everybody else is dead. But the guy that was the drunk driver, what they'll do sometimes, they'll get out of the car, sit on the trunk of the car, pull out, you know, a fifth of something and sit there and start guzzling. So when the officer arrives, he says, oh, I was so distraught over killing all these people, I decided to find a fifth and drown my sorrows. And that's called the guzzle defense. And that's how, in present law, many people are able to sometimes get around this idea of extrapolating backwards. So what the two-hour rule tries to do is try to fix that. One way of fixing the issue that the gentleman from Casper just brought up is to do an amendment on second reading. And so instead of it saying within 2 hours of driving, you put within 2 hours of the arrest. That would actually fix the problem he just illuminated. Because what we're trying to do is not deal with a driver after the fact, you know, going to their home or going, I think his example was going to a party where that representative was chugging beers. But so I think a good amendment would just be simply within time of arrest. As to the ignition interlock, the testimony again from YDOT was they already have this program up and running, switching it from May to Shell. They were able to, at least the testimony was that they were prepared to begin doing that. And I have to apologize. I haven't actually read fully that representative's bill, so I'm not sure what the distinctions are. And I should have read her bill before getting up here, and I forgot to do that. But if anyone else on the Judiciary Committee remembers precisely what that YDOT guy said, that would be appreciated.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And a question for the committee. First, I appreciate all the hard work, obvious, hard and careful work that went into this redraft. My question goes to the definitions, and I'm wondering if the committee at all addressed a definition of what it means to be in actual physical control of a vehicle. We defined drive and means to operate or be in actual physical control of a vehicle. I'm thinking of the possibility, the eventuality of a person leaving the bar late at night, goes to his vehicle to retrieve a coat or retrieve anything, gets the keys to the vehicle out of his pocket, unlocks the door of the car, and gets out and retrieves anything from the vehicle. Would that constitute being in physical control of the vehicle?
Chair Gingrey?
This issue comes up quite a lot, actually, on this floor. We've discussed it a few times in the past, and it actually comes up in court often. This idea of actual physical control, it's in our statute, and I actually wasn't changing that. I was just moving it so it would flow better with the bill. But the concept is that if the keys are in the ignition and you're in the vehicle, that you're in control of the vehicle, that at any time you could turn that ignition key on and drive, that is an element of the crime that has been satisfied. Where sometimes the case law gets a little interesting is are the interesting scenarios as to the drunk in the back seat sleeping it off with the keys in his pocket. And there's been some discussion as to the way to not get that is to throw the keys out into the field and then crawl in the back of the car. You know, that just gets crazy when you start talking those strange hypotheticals. For the most part, most prosecutors use their discretion well and know when to charge that correctly. Because what you don't want to happen is that the individual sitting there and has the keys and is able to drive. Here's what you're trying to stop. You don't want the officer to wait until they get on the road and say, well, I wanted to make sure they were truly driving before I pulled them over. Well, the objective was to actually not get the conviction. The objective was to keep an unsafe driver off the roads, and so that's why that's in there.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There's a lot of good things I see in this bill, but the one question I have is on the changes under fourth offense when you say within a lifetime. You know, that strikes me, a lifetime strikes me as a pretty long time. And, you know, I think you can build a scenario of, you know, suppose someone was arrested three times between 40 years ago and 45 years ago, maybe in Wyoming or maybe in another state that may have different criteria than we had now, or maybe we had 40 or 45 years ago. And this person finds himself in Wyoming carrying these three convictions from 40 to 45 years ago somewhere, and he's got the situation where if he's caught driving with .08, he's going to face a 5-year felony and a $10,000 change or $10,000 fine. Now somehow that strikes me as being a little, maybe a little heavy-handed for something that was yet admittedly done in his lifetime. But I mean, is the committee amenable to putting a realistic fixed number on it, or do you see what I'm saying on that? I'd like to discuss that a little bit.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, a little quick comment to the previous speaker that asked the question about the control of the car. I think it was the good gentleman from Powell. When I was mayor, we had quite a discussion about this particular thing, and then it's happened on the floor. If, in fact, a law enforcement officer sees somebody enter a vehicle, allows them to get started, and they go out and they have an accident, the question arose, is that officer and the city liable because they allowed that person to get in the car and start moving before they arrested him? That's one of the reasons the language is like it is, I believe, truly believe. And that's one of the reasons the body chose to go along with that in the past.
Chair Gingrey.
I didn't really have a thought, but I'll throw one out there. I guess there was a question on the... I guess there was a question on the fourth offense issue. If someone wanted to bring a second amendment, a second reading amendment, we certainly could take a look at that. The difficulty and why that was moved up to a lifetime, that when you start putting look-back periods in any type of statute, the difficulty becomes when, especially when you have a victim and or you know, a parent of a victim, saying, well, wait a minute, this was his, you know, fourth DUI, and you say, well, actually his third DUI was exactly 5 years ago, so we got to actually charge him with a first-time DUI. The other problem that you have to realize is maybe on paper that was his fourth DUI, but if you're getting four DUIs in a lifetime, you've driven a lot more than that drunk. And so, you know, if you want to bring an amendment, we certainly can look at that on second reading.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One comment about the good chairman's comment about the prosecutor would have discretion there. I don't see that happen. The officer in the field charges it. And I've defended, I don't know how many of the actual physical control cases, but it only gets to the prosecutor after it's been charged in the field 99% of the time. And then at that point, it's up to the prosecutor to determine what they might offer in terms of a plea agreement. So I just wanted to point that out from my perspective. On the as a defense attorney who represent, and my defense work is typically kind of these alcohol-related things or misdemeanor offenses with people who come, everyday people who come in and say, I've got a DUI. You know, what can you do to help me? And there isn't a lot you can do for people. I say, let me look at the police report. I'll let you look at it. You tell me if it's correct. If it isn't correct, we'll talk about that. See if there's probable cause for the stop. Because if there's probable cause for the stop, you know, most of the time, you don't have much of a shot. You might have something to argue in terms of, well, maybe I should be entitled to a deferred prosecution because this is my first one, and the BAC was 0.1 or 0.9, 0.09. Otherwise, you know, they're tough to defend, and that's been our policy, to make them tough to defend, that drunk driving is a crime. My question about the implied consent suspension, and the implied consent law, and I'm sorry I was off the floor, but where in the bill does that criminalize the failure to follow the officer's request for field sobriety tests? Right now, under the laws of the state, when you drive on the highways, you impliedly consent to taking those tests that you're asked to. And if you don't do that, you're then subject to the 6-month automatic suspension of your driver's license, unless within 10 days from the time you're arraigned by the court and told what you're charged with and what the penalty is, you plead guilty. If you do that, then that suspension goes away. But what is the justification for criminalizing it? And why do we need to criminalize it? And I think those are all my questions at the moment. Thank you.
Chair Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand you were off the floor, Mr. Speaker. The amendment took all that out. So the criminalizing the refusal is no longer part of this bill. So that part's not in there. And as to your question about your discretion of the prosecutor, what I was implying was, if you had a strange scenario where people usually use the one, what about the drunk sleeping it off in the back seat? The prosecutor certainly has the discretion to dismiss the charge outright and say, yes, I agree with you, that person did make a good choice and was sleeping it off. He should not have been charged. So,
is there any more discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 141 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 141 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill...
Madam Chair.
Representative Chair Childers.
Privilege of the floor.
Certainly.
Sometimes us people that are hearing impaired don't realize how loud they talk. And also in my enthusiasm to get a bill passed correct, I also get loud too. So for the people over in this part of the gallery, I'll apologize for getting a little loud when I was talking to one of the other representatives.
Thank you, Chair Childers. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House beg leave to rise and sit again at 2 p.m.
Having heard the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries. Representative Patton.
Madam Chairman, a personal privilege?
Certainly.
I would like to take a moment of your time to introduce to you the president of the Northwest Community College of Sheridan and Gillette, that is sitting up in our balcony to the right area. Kevin Drum. Kevin.
Welcome, President Drum. Committee announcements. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Yeah, the Republican Caucus will meet in the Hirschler Building regular room that we meet in.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning, Friday morning at 8 o'clock. House Bill 71, Film Industry Financial Incentives. Second bill will be House Bill 239, Bighorn Basin Discovery Center, and House Bill 169, Mortgage Loan Originators.
Okay, Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Friday morning, January the 30th at 7 a.m. in room 302 to consider the following bills. House Bill 21, Gray Wolf Trophy Game Status. House Bill 32, Gray Wolf Management. House Bill 143, Wolf Management 2. House Bill 148, Gray Wolves Legislative Declaration 2. House Bill 245, Wolf Management Repeal of 2007 Legislation 2. And reminder, look at the video conferencing proposal and where it is, and talk to your constituents. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Thursday, tomorrow at noon recess in House 18. We'll take up the continuation of House Bill 168, Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility, House Bill 187, Early Detection Smoke Alarms, House Bill 188, Insurance Coverage of PK, and House Bill 250, Classification of Fire Chiefs After End of Term.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is just a reminder that the Democrats are holding our caucus at Avanti's Restaurant. Thank you.
Chair Landon.
Madam Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, is meeting this afternoon upon adjournment in H-17 to hear House Bill 41, Cremation Expenses, House Bill 42, Burial Arrangements, and House Bill 120, Assisted Suicide.
Chair Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will continue to be meeting upon adjournment. We will continue discussing House Bill 116, Recording of Custodial Interrogations, and take up House Bill 237, Name Changes Sealed.
Chair Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number two will meet tomorrow, Thursday, at 8 a.m. in room 204 to hear House Bill 130, State Parks Matching Account, House Bill 3, Coroners, Archaeological Burials, House Bill 252, Wyoming Retirement System, Hospital Participation, and House Bill 54, Workers' Compensation Amendments. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Chair McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, your House Committee number four, Education, will meet upon adjournment tonight in room H-10, where we will take up House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program, House Bill 174, Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarship, House Bill 223, Bullying Prevention, and House Bill 269, School Finance At-Risk Funding.
Chair Semlick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet at a kind of non-customary time today upon adjournment Wednesday, January 28th. To continue working on rangeland monitoring, House Bill 75, Subdivisions, Water Supply Study, House Bill 99, Veterinary Loan Repayment Program, House Bill 166, Pregnancy Testing Cattle, House Bill 198, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessments, House Bill 206, Care of Animals After Domestic Violence, and House Bill 193, Water and Food Freedom Act. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, anyone else? The Committee of the Whole stands in recess until 2 p.m.